Welcome into Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming all around the world on the Game Nashville app. What is going on? Chase McCabe alongside my good friend Brent Peterson, longtime Nashville Predators coach, broadcaster, and all-around good guy. We are live at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Everything brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Yes, clap, clap. Red Spirits and Wine and Yeehaw Beer. Good to be here tonight, Brent. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you. I guess when you have nothing to do, you're all-around good guy.
Listen,
coach, player, good guy.
You are my coach. I come and talk to you when I need to know things about the team or have questions.
I know nothing about anything.
You know a lot. But we have a lot to get into tonight about this team and about you, and that's what we do here on Smashville Live. But let's start with last night, Brent. The Predators go on the road. They start this road trip. They get a big win in Winnipeg, a Central Division rival, a team that there's been some bad blood, some history over the last few years. Preds win it 2-1 in overtime. It took the extra period, but I really like the way the Predators played.
I love the way they're playing on the road right now. They're playing gritty and they're playing aggressive. They're going to the net. They're doing all those kind of things. And in the zone, they're starting to get the defensive schemes of the coach that he wants them to do. And he wants them to be a zone, but yet a man-to-man in that zone, sort of a hybrid. And they're playing. They're diving, blocking shots, doing everything they can to help UC last night. And he played very well at times. He fought through. He saw pucks through people, and he got made some great saves later in the game when Winnipeg had a power play, especially with about 6 minutes to go. They had a power play, and they got through that. So, and they were able to get to overtime, and then it was a great play in overtime, and it was a nice win for the Preds.
That was a game where, and I've joked with you before, you're never going to get a perfect 60 minutes out of anyone, but that's as close to it as you can get. And they were down 1-0, battled back, tied it up. That's how the score was until they go into overtime. And you mentioned the penalty kill. I thought the penalty kill was tremendous last night.
Tremendous. They have a great power play.
What does that do for their confidence?
I hope it helps it. But the problem is that we always come home and then we blow our confidence. So they're out on the road for four games here in Calgary tomorrow night, and I think it'll just help them. And we're almost to the point where we have to win every other game, or 50-50. Instead of, they say, 2 out of 3, we got to be better than that. We got to win and go on a roll here. And tomorrow night's a big game because it continues to roll, or you just slide back to where you were before.
When you were coaching, how much, especially when you were in a situation like the Predators are in, outside looking in, but you're right there, you're knocking on the door, how much were you checking the standings every day to see how close
you were?
Some
people don't, but I checked it every hour. at nighttime, I used to go in between periods. We had a home game or something. Look at my what were we using back then? We were using, I better not say this, Blackberries.
Yeah.
But we were using those and just checking the scores and seeing that, because I wanted to see who the next team was playing and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I watched it very, I was very much a, wanted to know the standings and who was where and what was what.
You said they've played well on the road, as we talked about, but Winnipeg, the rivalry, is that kind of what this team needs sometime? Is they need that little extra oomph because they're going up against a team that they don't like?
Yeah, and I think there is a lot of bad blood, but it was a well-played game last night. It wasn't chippy at all. It was just well-played. Everybody played hard, and certainly the Predators played hard, and they did a good job of eliminating Scheifele's line, which is their best line by far. And Connor's a heck of a player, and then Wheeler's on the next line, and he's a heck of a player. So they got a couple good lines. They're missing a lot of their D-men, and they finally, we picked them to miss the playoffs because they lost all their D. They lost three of their D-men. And when you lose three of your top four D-men, that's tough to take. That'd be like us losing Josi, Ekholm, and whoever. And that was tough for them, but they've done a great job with Winnipeg, and they've done a great job of making sure that the players knew what they were doing, and they were doing it with minor league defensemen at the time. And so they've done a good job of being there, but I think we're going to be better than them by the end of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, it's looking that way. They get the news yesterday. It's not official, but it looks like Dustin Byfuglien will not return.
I'd like to have him.
Yeah, that's where I was going with this.
That's too bad.
Is that the type of player that you think this team is missing right now? And I don't think it happens this year. I don't even know if he wants to play again. He's going to be a free agent. But to me, a Dustin Byfuglien type player is what the Predators have been missing.
Yeah, I don't think it's Dustin Byfuglien, but a Dustin Byfuglien type player is for sure the kind of guy we need. The big defenseman like Ekholm, who stays home, and Josi and Ellis can do their thing up front and go, go, go. And And although that we need a real strong defensive defenseman who can play and has mobility to play and has puck skills to play. You can't just be a big guy and go out there and turn over the puck or throw it up the wall and, you know, bad things happen. So you have to have some puck skills and some skating skills to be able to turn and be mobile as a defenseman.
Yeah, and he can play forward.
He can do anything he wants. He just goes out there.
Big buff.
He shoots it from the middle of the ice on the power play. Like Scheifele used to walk up the line and they'd throw across to him. I said, no shots from the middle of the ice, guys. And sure enough, down the middle he'd come and he'd just blow it by you.
So, you know, somebody like that, of course, we're, you know, nearing the trade deadline, which is tough this time of year to talk about that. But what have you seen defensively? Because that was an area that this team needed to improve upon when they made the change from Peter Laviolette to John Hines. I feel like last night was a prime example of it getting better.
Yeah, you know, we were man-to-man, and it ended up being when their forward would cycle up the wall, our defenseman would have to go almost to the blue line. So right now it's just a zone, but in the zone that you're man-to-man. So if the puck's in the corner, you have a defenseman in the corner, you always have a defenseman in front. And if the two defensemen are in the corner, the center or the low forward has to be the guy in the front of the net. But you want to have the D-man back in there and step out to the shots from the slot. And then the two wingers got their two defensemen. And they don't if they cross and they go down the line, they just let them go to the next player. And it's got to be a tough system to do because it's what I used to play. And we used to play in the old days, we used to play that way. Now everybody's got the defenseman going all over. That's why they're saying man-to-man. But man-to-man, if you're not good one-on-ones, you're not good man-to-man. I don't think our team's very good one-on-ones. We're smaller. They spin on us. They hold on to the puck. They shield the puck from us. We can't get to them. So guy loses his man. He's going to the net with the puck. And there you go. You have to bring somebody else from the front of the net to get him. So he's doing the right thing by playing his own man-to-man. And I think the guys are starting to get it. They've been man-to-man so long that they haven't got it yet. And they're starting last night was a good case when you only give up one and they do a good job like that.
Well, and you're missing one of your best defensemen, too.
Right, exactly.
Ryan Ellis. So that hurts. And, you know, I look at the defense core, and it's always been so good, you know, since this organization started. But you lose P.K. Subban. I think everybody will admit now that you miss him from that standpoint.
You don't miss him for the $10 million, but you miss him for the play on the ice. You're right.
Right. You miss him as a player, for sure. And, you know, a good locker room guy, community guy. But Dante Fabbro, to me, we were talking about this before the show. In a year or two, he's going to be a stud.
Yeah,
but he's having to grow into it. And you literally had to throw him into the fire for this year because you needed him. You know, last year, the five games or whatever he played, he was on that third pairing with Dan Hamhuis. That was the perfect guy to have him with because Dan could bring him along. Now Matthias Ekholm is not only having to do his thing, he's having to help bring Fabbro along on the second line, and that's put more pressure on Matthias Ekholm,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, without Ellis going down, it really caused a real problem because now Fabbro had to play way on the wrong seat on the bus for sure. And I think that he's done really well, but he hasn't done, like, we needed more from people in that position. Not more from him, but in that position. And so with Yossi and Dante's played very, very, very well for a young guy, but we just needed more than that. And I think our team started the whole year thinking we're going to be this power play or this power scoring juggernaut that nobody was going to be able to stop because we're going to get six goals a night. Well, you don't get six goals a night because of goaltending and do good defensive play by the other team. And if you play one way and play offense, and we were 9-3-2 after 11 games or whatever, or 13 games, and we were just, it was going good. And then all of a sudden, two guys got hurt, and we went down the tube, and we couldn't get her back, and we still haven't got it back consistently. We've got it back some, but we haven't got it back consistently every night. So we just have to realize what we are, and we're a good two-way team, but we're not an offensive juggernaut like we thought.
Yeah.
Guys are not getting the points they're getting on other teams, so we have to play some defense. So they finally got it together where they're playing some defense. They're playing hard on defense, but I've always said that the best way to play defense is to forecheck the team on the other end and keep the puck down there. If you're in their end cycling and doing all the things, that's what happened last night. We used to have, it'd be like a power play against when the Golden Knights were here the other night. It was like a power play the whole game, 5-on-5. We never got anything going. We couldn't even get on our own end. Last night we played in their end more, and that was good because they have less time on the rush, and they had some good forwards, so it was good for us to get to playing in their end and go to the net and cause trouble and try to get goals like that, dirty goals on the road.
What have you seen, and I know it's a small sample size. It's been about a month. John Hines takes over, and you obviously have some connections to people he was connected with in New Jersey, with Tom Fitzgerald, Ray Shiro. But what have you seen so far out of John Hines?
Well, he's given and I don't know whether I would have had the courage to do it with the playoffs on the line, but he's given Turris and Grundlund some penalty-killing time and some extra time. And they're playing, instead of playing 12 minutes, they're playing now 16, 18 minutes. And Joey's getting less time, which is good because he was up too high. And even Yossi's minutes are pretty high, too. So without Ellis, he's had to play almost every second shift. But I think John's done a real good job. I don't know him at all. I don't know him personally, but I know that he plays a 1-3-1 in the neutral zone like Peter did, but he has forecheck. He really knows when the guys are skating. When we're skating, we're on the forecheck. In the D zone, he really tried to clean that up, and he's trying to clean the penalty killing up, and the penalty killing was great last night. I just hope it continues because we go along for 3 or 4 games. We don't get allowed any of them without 3 out of 4 one night. And it ruins your confidence and your average, and you're backing off. Like going into Vancouver, we'll be tentative because they scored so many goals on us on the power play. We'll be tentative. You can't be tentative. You just got to go play. You can't think.
Well, tomorrow night, too, Calgary. I mean, they got some offense.
Exactly. A lot of everybody's got offense. And look at the two guys are going to play the next night, Draisaitl and McDavid. They're pretty good, too, and they're pretty good on the power play. So it's a tough situation, but I think our guys can do it. If they get 2 more wins out on this road trip, that'd be 6 out of 8 points. That'd be great. I would think that'd be a goal for the team is to win 2 out of 3 right now and get back in the playoffs by that way.
He is Brent Peterson, longtime associate coach and also a broadcaster. Chase McCabe hanging out. We are live at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. It is Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Brewing Company. When we come back, I'll get Brent's thoughts on this time of year. The trade deadline. We'll do that next. Smashville Live, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. We're back. Smashville Live here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game. We're live at the Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Every Wednesday night we do this show. We bounce around to different locations. Chase McCabe alongside longtime Predators associate coach Brent Peterson. All of this brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer. So, Brent, as I mentioned, this time of year, trade deadline coming up in a few weeks. It's exciting from the broadcasting standpoint because you never know who's going to move where. But for coaches and players, what is this time of year like?
Well, for a coach, it's the same as a general manager. If they're talking and they have ideas what they want to do, whether you're a seller or a buyer or standing pat. But the player, it's a terrible time for the players, I think. I remember going through about 11 of these or 10 of these. And when I was hurt one year, I was gone. So it was maybe 10 times I could have been traded at the deadline. And I was traded once before. When I did play, it wasn't at the deadline, but I just felt awful. You know, you wake up in the morning, and I wanted to be traded. I wanted to be traded out of Detroit to get to Buffalo. But you just feel sick to your stomach because you've been with these guys for so long. You do you're on the road with them and that, and then you're gone to another team. You got to make new friends, and it wasn't that bad.
The family aspect, too.
Yeah, one year I got traded from Vancouver to Hartford, and it was Detroit to Buffalo, and I ended up going. It was about a week before Christmas when I got traded with McCourt and Foligno and them, and we got traded for a bunch of guys from Detroit. So I went up, played a couple games, went back, and on New Year's Eve I drove from Detroit with a U-Haul with all my stuff in the car, U-Haul all the way down to Buffalo. We found a tree, the last tree on the a Christmas tree, and we went and celebrated Christmas the next day.
Oh, wow.
And then we just got into our house that night. We got in about 11 o'clock at night, and then we had Christmas the next day. So Christmas Eve was the only day I could go because we used to play all the time at Christmas time.
Yeah.
So we played the next day. I had the tree and the dinner, and we went to the store, just got some stuff real fast, had fed the kids, went and played a game.
It's changed a little bit. Now you have the Christmas break, which I think is good.
It's great thing that they do now.
But, look, and I'm curious, too, as associate coach, how much input did you and Barry have during those times, especially as the team got more and more competitive and you knew that playoff pushes were going to happen?
Nobody's more prepared than David Poile. And he'd go, before he makes a trade, he goes over all the, he calls everybody to Canada and asks about the guy that you want to get, or if you're, you know, like, and he always keeps Barry, he at least keeps the head coach would let us know, but
yeah.
Barry would always know what was going on, Barry would have input. David's very transparent, he's very open to things, and he wants our ideas, he wants us to be inquisitive about everything, and just make sure that you're part of it, but your job is still a coach.
Yeah.
So, we used to have meetings before we got on the ice some days, we always had it on a game day. We always played on the trade deadline all the time.
Yeah.
Now they moved it to Monday, so it's not quite, it used to be always the second Tuesday in March or first Tuesday in March, I think, all the time.
Yeah, it seems like it's earlier this year.
It is earlier. It's a week earlier, and it's also on a Monday, I think. Yeah. And so...
So they play the day before.
Right. So
Columbus.
The night before in Columbus, right after, that's a four-game road trip they come back from, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's going to be a tough time for
2 days before.
A lot of guys that want to stay here, and yet some guys, you know, and we were talking earlier about, you know, tourists and those guys that there was rumors they were going to try to trade them, and now John's got them playing great.
Yeah.
Granlund and even Smitty's playing good. Everybody's playing better now.
Yeah, you're definitely seeing a difference.
So I think, and if we could continue this, it'd be great. You know, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some, you're going to lose some even playing good. But you have to make sure that you play consistent. And you can't just play a great game like that, throwing yourself bodies all over the ice, and then going to Calgary and then just play so-so. It's got to be a top-notch performance every single night.
Yeah. And that's what he's trying to get out of these guys.
And he's done a good job of giving back the confidence to Tourist, and the confidence to Granlund, and the confidence to Yarn Kong and these guys. These guys have played very well to start the year, and I think John's found out from the assistant coaches who've been here all year that, you know, this is what we tried, this is what didn't work, this is what worked, and it's been good so far.
How hard is it for an assistant to go through a change like this? I mean, The system that you had and the guy that you were working under is now gone. Now you have a new boss,
right,
essentially, that comes in here. But they're staying. I mean, for now,
they're there and they got to know the system and they got to do it. Just like we stood around and watched. I always say, don't think it hurts the team, mm-hmm. because so like a guy standing still over there, he says, "What should I do? Where should I go? Where am I supposed to be?" And it's too late by then.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure that the guy knows the system and all. When we used to get guys, we got Brendan Witt one year, and he was the only big guy that we really went after. We wanted a big defenseman, and he was at the end of his career, so he didn't play as well as we wanted him to. But I didn't even go over a system with him because he couldn't comprehend what we were going to tell him. We're going to do this on the power play, put this on the penalty kill, and just go out and play hockey. We told him, and he played good for the first five games, and then he sort of fell off. But you can't put too much in their heads because they can't think. You can't think. You got to read and react in hockey, and it's a tough thing to do. And it's a tough thing when a player goes from one team to another, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's definitely tough. It's Smashville Live here at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Now, I know you've coached in the league, played in the league for a long time, and I've talked to current players, former players, yourself, of how much the league has changed over the last few years, and I look in the 20-plus years that the Predators have been a franchise and just how different this league is now. I mean, there's a lot more speed. You don't have the big guys as much anymore. There's still a place for them.
Right.
But it seems like skill and speed seems to be the way that the league's going.
Well, big skill guys are better than small skill guys, but if you can't find the big skill guys, the small skill guys and speedy guys are the guys you want because you got to be able to skate in this league. That's number one. And the reason why we had such a good team the one year that everybody got hurt at the end of the year, but we started when Krieg came first off. We were so fast compared to other teams.
06-07?
06-07. Yeah. The new rules came in, you know, the hooking and that, and you used to get away with all that hooking. Guy gets a stick on his hands now. They're calling it automatically. So the new rules came in, and E-Rat was good, and Korea was good, and Leg One was good that year. And we had a good team, and we traded for Forsberg another year, and we had a good bunch of guys that should have gone past the first round. But we didn't because guys were injured, and we had half the team playing. And they were bringing up guys like O'Reilly at the end of the year, and just to give us some, not the one in St. Louis, but his brother. And, just to fill in our, because we were so shorthanded, and San Jose just beat us. But it was an interesting thing that the guys, you know, they struggle at times, but I think our guys are going to be good. I don't think Davis is going to have to. I don't think he can do a lot, but if you can get into one big defenseman, and the league's changed, so even a skilled defenseman, you're not going to get that from. You're not going to get Crook out of Boston or those kind of guys. You're going to have to find a. And Tenorti might be the guy. Tenorti's played very well.
Yes.
He's developed his skills very well. He's adapted to it. He's an older guy. Not an older guy, but he's a middle-20s guy that can play a little bit. And he's playing more and more. He was out there in the last. I saw him go around the net with a minute to go in the third period. He was on the ice. So they got to have confidence in him to have him on the ice at that time of the game.
Was the 06-07 team probably the best team that you can remember having here?
Yeah, I think we had 110 points.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was.
And then the President's Trophy year, obviously, they surpassed it.
Yeah, that was the most points we've ever had when I was there. And it was a great team. It was a good bunch of guys, and they got along, and they played hard. Did we lose four games to one to the San Jose? I can't remember. It was sad that we lost that series.
But everybody was hurt. That's as you were saying.
Yeah.
That was the problem.
You know, we might have been just as good the year that Phoenix beat us out.
Yeah,
we had the Red Hawks. That was a good team too. Those were probably the two best teams.
Yeah, that was a good year too because you win the first round.
Right,
it was 2 years in. That was beat Detroit in the first round, and then go to Phoenix in the second round and rattle off the season.
Did their thing that night.
But I can remember a guy that, you know, I used to work with telling the story that he was standing in the lobby of the hotel. Jeremy Benefield's his name. Was standing in the lobby of the hotel, and Barry comes up to him and says, so can you skate? And he goes, not very well. And he goes, so you'll play goal? Because you guys were just riddled with injuries. Ramsey Abid had been called up.
Right. It was really sad because we hurt ourselves too. I think whoever took a slap shot in practice and it broke somebody's ankle or his leg and
Shea hurt somebody.
You know, it just bad things happened and it was like why we waited 6-7 years to make the playoffs or whatever, 6 years to get to this team. You know, we went from making the first round and losing out to Detroit in the six games to going to finally beating Detroit in the first round and things just fell apart. But that's the way it goes, and now you just got to go on. And I think we have no players from that era.
Yeah.
I think Peck is the only one. I've been gone 9 years now.
Yeah.
And I think Peck is the only guy that was around when I was
That seems right, because 05, I think he got called up once in 05, you know, for a quick stint. Because he's in the team picture, and I laugh every time I see him. He's a baby.
Yeah, exactly. I had a black mustache back then, too.
You did. You did. Barry still had some hair.
That's right. Barry did have some hair, didn't he?
What was it that was so special about coaching with Barry Trotz? Because you guys were day one here from the very beginning.
You know what? He's very honest with the guys. He just tells it like it is. And if they don't like it, it's too bad. But he builds – see, if you're a coach and you distance yourself from your players – and you think you can't be like Scotty Bowman was. You can't do that in this day and age.
Yeah.
You have no relationship. You have to really have some kind of relationship with your players. You build that relationship up where you can trust each other. And then when you have to come down hard on those guys, you'll survive it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, and every coach has his own style. But I just think Barry built relationships. He's carrying a big bag of wedding presents in or kids' birthdays. Coming in, I said, "Who's that for?" He said, "Some of the players." He's giving, you know, wedding gifts, and he's just a great guy. He has time for you.
Yeah.
There's many times I heard guys say, "I just saw your coach down in Home Depot. He's always at Home Depot on Saturday morning, walking around talking to everybody. It was great." So that's the kind of guy he is. He gives you time. He's honest, but he's a tough guy. He's tough on the players, but he's not tough on the players. You know what I mean? He's just a great person. And when you're a great person and you love the guy, you'll play harder for him, and he's got the honor of playing pretty good hockey for not having any superstars or any stars, real stars.
How'd you get the job here? Did you know Barry before you got this job?
I did not know Barry, and he interviewed me about 6 months before when we were in Red Deer. He drove up from Calgary. Him and Paul Gardner were out scouting around everywhere and getting the guys for the expansion draft, and Barry says, "Can I come to Red Deer and talk to you?" So I went to his hotel room, We talked.
So you were coaching in Red Deer?
I was coaching in Portland, Oregon.
Or Portland, okay.
And we were in Red Deer on the road, and Barry says, and so I met him, and it was the first time I met him, and then they're all up, and we were in Toronto for, I was in Toronto for the All-Star game. I was the coach of the All-Star team, and we, and they met, and they had all their scouts there for the it's a game, it's an All-Star game for the whole league, for the whole Canadian Hockey League. And I, Bobby Orr and I were coaching one team, and Don Cherry and the guy from Ottawa was coaching the other team. We kicked their butts, and we had a great time. We had all the best players from the West were there, and it was a lot of fun, and Bobby Orr was great. I didn't ask for anything from him. I didn't ask for a signed stick. And then the mail the next week came a picture, a beautiful picture of him diving, you know, the diving in 1970, I think it was, 1970, when they beat the St. Louis Blues in four games. He got the puck out of the down to the corner, passed out to him, and he's diving in the air and scoring the goal, the winning goal, and the Boston Bruins won the Stanley Cup that year. And he, beautiful picture of that, and I didn't ask for anything. So he wrote on it to Brent, thanks for teaching me how to coach this team. He was great. He was a great guy.
We're here with Brent Peterson, longtime associate coach for the Nashville Predators. It is Smashville Live at the Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Chase McCabe alongside, and it's all brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Brewing Company. When we come back, we're going to talk about something that is very near and dear to Brent Peterson's heart. We will do that when we return here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I'm Goofy Goober!
It is Smashville Live here at Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Chase McCabe and longtime Predators associate coach and broadcaster Brent Peterson hanging out. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer. So, Petey, every year I call it the back to school dinner, is because it's like when everybody gets back together.
That's right.
Is Petey's Preds party for Parkinson's, and I know this is near and dear to your heart. It's well documented that you have Parkinson's disease.
Yes.
You said you play golf 6 days a week. It hasn't seemed to stop you or slow you down at all. But
well, it doesn't mean I play good. But
well, I don't know. I've heard you're pretty good.
No,
I've
not.
Heard you're pretty good.
I just love the game, so I have nothing to do all day, so I just go play golf.
Let's start with the dinner and then the golf tournament. That, like I said, you kick off the Pred season every year with a dinner, and you have alums that come back, see former players. The whole team gets involved. I mean, the coaches, everybody's there, and that has to feel good to you to have that kind of support from the team.
The management has been fantastic. The management and the players come every year, and all of them played last year, and they're just fantastic people when they give they give a whole day up and a night for the dinner. And we have, like you say, we have a dinner the night before, and we have auction, and the comedians have been fantastic over the years.
Oh, they're so funny. Dusty Slay this year was
awesome.
Oh, he
was great, wasn't he? He was, and even Bergazzi or whatever. Yeah. He was great the year before. We've had Ryan Hamilton was good. We've had some great, and I got to give Chaz Corzian a little boost because he's the one that gets the entertainment for us, but the comedians have been great. They've been worth the price of admission just for that. And then they get a nice dinner and they sit down there. There's 1,000 people on the floor of the arena. And it's really good. And then the next day we have two shotguns because we have so many teams that want to play. And we usually sell out at 54 teams of five, which is great. So we put, you know, as many as we can out in the morning. Then in the afternoon they have another shotgun. And us and the Predators split the proceeds. And we always make good money in those 2 days. So it's been a real treat to do it, real treat to have the Predators involved with it. And they've been nothing but supportive of whatever we've tried to do with PFP, Peterson for Parkinson's.
So with you, you've had it for how long now?
Well, I was diagnosed in 2001.
So
I have 20 years.
Almost, yeah.
20 years is coming up. And that's when I was diagnosed. You have it before you get diagnosed, but
right. You
just don't know about it until your hands start shaking or you can't move a limb or whatever. But it's mentally draining disease because everybody says it's physical because you can't walk or you can't. Sometimes my tongue's tied and sometimes I can't speak and sometimes I'm so tied up that I can't even move. But I usually get out and try to do some things. And we have Rocksteady Boxing and we have some good therapies for Parkinson's, and one of them is boxing, but another one is riding bikes and doing those kind of things, and you got to stay in shape. And I lost some weight and I lost some muscle mass, and it's been really tough for me lately because I guess my immune system doesn't work as well as it when I'm sick, but I get over colds fast, still fast, and I can do a lot of things. So it's been really good.
And you said about 9 years ago you had the brain stimulation.
Yes.
I remember sitting in Bridgestone Arena, and they show the video of you going in for surgery.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, like catching the ball and walking around.
It was pretty cool. It was surgery I had to be awake for.
Yeah.
And so they did put two electrodes in my brain and sewed it up, and I didn't feel a thing. It was like being in the dentist chair. Eh? You can hear the noise of the when they're drilling in the brain, and then you go through it and it goes down to the bottom and gets through, and you could hear it. You could hear the drill going, but you couldn't feel it. So it was good. And then I had to be awake to test me.
Sure.
Where they put the electrodes, because the electrodes could go in different places. If you don't put them in the right place, you could go blind. You could do a lot of things that aren't very appealing. But so they put them in the right place, and they got it. Took me about a year to get it straightened out, and so it was on the right dials. And I have my own remote that I can move it in and out, and it's pretty cool deal that what they did for me. So it's been good.
And it allows you to do the things you want to do.
You know what it does? It allows me to, I don't have to take medications, many medications, and for every medication I took, I always had there was always a side effect or something. So when you have a side effect, then you have to take another medication for another side effect. This took away every drug I had to take except for one. And I take it like four times a day, and then and the DBS was great. Deep brain stimulation is what they call it. DBS. It was great. It's great. Still working. It's always going to be working. It's right in my brain. It sometimes makes me crazy because I talk fast. I can't slow down because I got energy in my brain. I'm just going at a mile a minute, and I
thought that was just the coach in you.
No, that's not, I never used to be like that. But I was calm, cool, and collected on the bench.
So, how much have you seen since your diagnosis? How much have you seen the research and the treatments all change?
Yeah, the treatments and the medications have come a long ways. I still don't know how you get Parkinson's. Still don't know what the cause is. But the medications have been great. They take away right away your trembling and your stiffness of gait and that kind of thing. The only thing that doesn't help is your balance. Sometimes I fall down in the sand traps. I do snow angels and trying to get out of there. And the guys are all, can we help you? I said, no, I'll be all right. So I fall down a lot because my balance isn't there. But it's been good. The Predators have been so good to me. They could have kicked me out on the street and just said, you're not. But Sean Henry and the Predators, David Poyle and the Predators, they've been fantastic. They let me park in the garage still, and they let me, and they pay me a little bit of money to do some, consulting work for them, and I can keep my health care and those kind of things. And it's just been, they've been fantastic to let me work for them and keep going. And I don't do a lot, but I do some things, and it's been really fun.
So I know that you've mentioned in the past, and going to the dinners for about 5 years now. I guess it has been however long I've been covering the team. You've talked to Michael J. Fox. He's obviously one that has Parkinson's. Ozzy Osbourne just came out and announced that he's been diagnosed with Parkinson's as well. What has that whole thing been like of being able to connect with other people, not just celebrities, but other people that have this disease and be able to swap notes and things like that?
Most people, we've now developed support groups in Franklin. We support Mount Juliet, Clarksville, those kind of places, and they're all under Peterson for Parkinson's umbrella, and we fund, that's what we use our money for, to fund their events and their get-togethers and all their things, so that's what we do with the money. But anyways, the it's been good because most of the people are calling me about the DBS to ask me how I got through it. It's a four-week process, and it's a tough to do brain surgery, and people are scared to death to do it, but Darren's mother, and she's been great ever since. They call me, and I'll talk to anybody. I talked to two guys from Sweden that were trying to get DBS done, and most of them ask about DBS because Parkinson's is an individual disease. It's different for everybody. It's different for, you can either have a tremble in your finger, you can have a slowness of gait, you can have a falling down with no balance, all those kind of things, and nobody has the same thing that you can get with Parkinson's, but it's been good because I've been called by a lot of people around the world. Brian Grant and I are good friends now. After he is a great guy, played for the Miami Heat and the Portland Trail Blazers, and he lives in Portland now. He has a foundation also, and we keep in touch. And He's been a great guy. Michael J. Fox, it was great to talk to him about it. Twice I talked to him about it.
I'm glad to see him doing, you know,
he's doing
TV
great.
Shows.
Yeah, he's doing great. He's doing great, and he didn't have DBS, so.
Yeah.
I think he just said that he didn't want to have a brain surgery this time of his life, so that's why he didn't do it. But he's been medicated very well, and he's done a good job.
Is there a certain point with the disease that you have to have the brain surgery, or can you do it at any time?
No, you have to be in good shape, and you have to be pretty younger. The older people couldn't handle brain surgery. They couldn't handle the anesthesia, et cetera, but I think that mostly anybody that's in fairly healthy good shape and fairly healthy can do it. And so, you know what? It doesn't work for everybody. That's the problem. Like, guys call me, and I say, it works for me. That's all I can tell you. And they go in, and they get it done, and it doesn't work for them. So certain kinds of – if it'll take you off your medications, that's when you do it. If it doesn't, then it's no use doing it. So I was able to do it, and Barry tells us a good story about me. First day I was in there, and I was bouncing off the walls, and he said, well, I need to talk to you, Brent. And I'm walking around the corner. I'm almost running down the aisle, and he says, Brent, come back and get me. And I said, I was gone. He said, I couldn't find me for the whole day because I was just bouncing off the walls that first day I got there. So it was kind of interesting the way that worked out.
So if people, you know, like we said, to start this, have the dinner and everything at the beginning of the year, and you raise a lot of money, but if people want to donate, if people want to help out throughout the year, how can they do that?
PetersonForParkinson's.org. PetersonForParkinson's.org is our website, and you can donate right on the website, and it's very good, and we'd love to have your contribution or be a part of it. There's a group in town, I can't remember the group, and I just read the emails that came in here. They called and said they wanted to give a free performance for us, for another event. Yeah. So we're getting all kinds of people coming out of the woodwork because Parkinson's are shut-ins. They don't come out because they're afraid that they're shaking around and they don't want to be seen by people, and they just stay in. One guy I gave two tickets to. I give two tickets every night to a Parkinson's patient and their caregivers or their care partners.
Yeah.
And they come to the game and they sit up at 108 where my tickets are, and we give them every game. We give them out to them. And the foundation buys them for them, and they come to every game. One guy said to me, he says, I haven't been outside the house in 3 years, and I had a great time. He sent me a note. I had a great time at the game. It was fun. I hope I can do it again. I says, we'll get you out there again. So it was great to hear.
Well, very, very, very cool. Kudos to you and everybody that works for Petersons for Parkinson's. Of course, your lovely wife, Tammy, being a part of it as well.
And, she is. Yeah, she helped me get going with it.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, and look, 6 days a week playing golf, I like it. And here
well,
with
she's
us.
The one that kicks me out of the house to do that. Yeah. She can't stand me.
No, that's okay. It's fun for you to do that. Yeah. Brent Peterson, longtime associate coach and broadcaster for the Nashville Predators, here with us on Smashville Live. It's all brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer. Brent, when we return, let's preview a game. Got a big one tomorrow night for the Nashville Predators.
Sure.
We'll do that next. It is Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're back here on Smashville Live. We are at the Brewhouse 100 in Bellevue. Give Brent Peterson a round of applause. Brent Peterson, longtime associate coach for the Nashville Predators and broadcaster as well. Chase McCabe here with you, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, and Yeehaw Beer. In a few minutes, we're going to draw for a Philip Forsberg bobblehead. So if you have not signed up, do so now. And speaking of Prince Philip, as they like to call him, February 26th, he will be the special guest on Smashville Live alongside Callie Yarncroke. That will be at Boomba's East Nashville. But next week, we'll be at Boomba's here in Bellevue and have Yannick Weber and Matt Irwin as our special guest. So it's been really cool to bounce around the city, go to where the fans are for Smashville Live. But, Brent, this team has some business to take care of tomorrow night. They already took care of Winnipeg, which were two huge points, a big win. As we started off the show, they played well. I mean, they played a solid 60-plus minutes to win that game. Calgary tomorrow night, though, with pregame at 7, puck drop at 8 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Not an easy one. Not an easy one at all.
No, they've got a good team, and they finished first last year, and they lost to Colorado in the first round. So they're motivated to get back there, and they're in the second wild card spot right now. They're 3 points ahead of the Nashville Predators, and of course the Predators got two games in hand at the time. But It's going to be tough. Johnny Hockey is there. Monahan's there. Kachuk's leading the team in scoring, 42 points, I think he has. And then they have Lindholm that they traded from Carolina.
Yep.
And those are those four guys carry them. And on defense, they are missing Giordano, who was a Norris Trophy winner last year, and they miss him. But they still have Brody and a few other defensemen, but that's where they're weak right now. They have young guys or lesser players on the back end. They have to play in Calgary's end to win the game. They just open it up. They have too many top-notch players up front. And they do it like we have to do it. They have to outwork the other team, and we have to outwork them. And if we don't outwork them, they're going to come to work. They're going to come to play. And they're a tough team. They played Edmonton. They had fights all over the place. Of course, that was for Alberta. But
that was fun, though. They even had a goalie fight.
I'm telling you, it was unbelievable.
That was old school.
That was old school right there. That's right.
Calgary is a team that I felt this way last year. I feel this way again this year. And it might bite me, but I think they're good. Yeah, but I'm not a believer yet.
Yeah, they're sort of the same as us. They have five forwards.
Yeah.
They have 40 points, you know, right in that area. We have Joel Josi that's winning the goal points getting for the Predators way ahead of everybody else. But
sure.
Anyways, Calgary's that kind of team. They're not real exciting. They're not real splashy, but they just come to work. And when they come to work, they'll beat you. So if you match their work ethic, you got a chance.
And I think this team, and this goes back to Peter Laviolette, but they've held on to this mentality, one game at a time.
Yeah,
because that's how you have to do it.
Have to
that's the way you have to look at it. They beat Winnipeg. I heard the guys after the game saying, we'll enjoy this one for a few minutes, and then on to Calgary.
That's what you have to
do. And they've turned the focus. You got Edmonton afterwards, then at Vancouver. This Western Canada swing is not an easy one. It never has been.
No.
But I think this is another game that the way they played on the road, the way they played against Winnipeg, if they can put those back-to-back efforts together, I really like their chances tomorrow night.
Yeah, I like their chances if they come to play like they did. And they've been so inconsistent this year. You see a game or two like they played last night on the road. They'd come home and just play terrible. Yeah. There's no other way to say it. They didn't play good at all. Nobody played good. You couldn't find one guy other than last week. Then Pekka Rinne was the only guy that showed up that night. He stood on his head, or it could have been 10-0.
Yep.
And it's just one of those things. You got to – I mean, they're 2 points behind Vegas when they went into that game. Now they're 6 points back, but Vegas has won a couple, and they beat us and go to four. If we go to zero, if we would have won the game. That's why I thought everybody was going to be ready, because they had played the night before, and we hadn't played for 2 days. So it was kind of frustrating to see them play the way they did, but – they got over it. They're resilient guys, and they have to be. You have to be resilient because you can't win every game in this league. The league's too good. I've always said the league it's a great league, and you just got to take it when you come. But you have to work every night. You can't just show up and think you're going to win, and you can't just show up and think you're going to score a bunch of goals. You have to work.
And
to
I think
get
that's
goals.
What John Hines has been trying
you're right.
to get
mental
them
toughness
to do.
He's trying to get them to be mentally tough. Where they're if something bad happens. You push back and you do it right now, and your mental toughness is what he's trying to get across to the guys, to be mentally tough, to be hard on the puck, to be hard to play against, and we were hard to play against last night. I mean, Scheifele was frustrated as heck, and line A was
on fire.
Line A was frustrated. We frustrated their big boys, and we went down and finally got a great goal on the. Brandon got a great goal in the overtime to win the game. Yeah. We got 2 points out of that. Now, like I said, you put that aside and you concentrate totally on Calgary for tomorrow night to win the game. Somehow get points out of the game.
How impressive have you been with the goaltending as of late? Because I have seen a turnaround with both Pekka Rinne and Juuse Saros.
So have I. And I think they should keep playing them both.
Yeah.
And then pick the guy when we make the playoffs. And the guy should have no pressure on him at all, because if we don't do well in the first game or two, the other guy will be in there. So we got two good goalies, one very elderly at 37, and one very young at 23, I think he is.
Yeah.
And they're both good goalies. And Juuse had a real struggle there for a while. That's why Pekka played more games. And now, after last night, he was great. He saw everything. He was out on his crease in an area. He was good on the angles. He went down and they couldn't see the top of the top corners like they had before, And Pekka was terrific on against the Golden Knights the other day.
Well, they pick each other up.
They do.
And I think that's what's so important.
You're exactly right.
And they have this – I did a thing for the Preds Profiles last night that just how close those two are. And it's unique because Pekka is mentoring the guy that's eventually going to take a spot.
Right.
Whether, you know, one way or another. I mean, that's the plan. And I think that's what's so neat of just how close those guys are. It's like a big brother, little brother thing.
And both of them have you know, UC has – lots to learn, but he's still playing great, and Pekka's just been great for him, and it's been a good couple couple of years for that, and it's been good to see that they do that together.
Let's make somebody a winner, shall we?
Sure.
You want to do the honors?
Sure, I'll stick
for a Philip Forsberg bobblehead, and in a couple weeks you can come out and get it signed.
Brenna Graven.
Brenna Graven is
Brenna
the
Graver.
Winner. Where's she at?
Where's Brenna?
We will find her. We will give her the bobblehead. And she can come out to Smashville Live in a couple weeks and get it signed. So there you go. There she is. She was very excited to win it, so be cool. So real quick, Calgary, as we said, take care of that tomorrow. Yeah. Edmonton, though.
Two great players on Edmonton, McDavid and Dreisaitl. And you stop
McDavid
them.
Is so much fun to watch.
He's fun to watch. He's the fastest guy I've ever seen in my life. He might be the best player ever to play the game when he gets his speed up. And every year he's got 100 points, so you got to stop him and Dreisaitl and Nugent Hopkins, and then you're all right because they're defensive.
James Neal's been pretty good for him, too.
James Neal's been good because he's played with McDavid most of the year. And then Vancouver's the last game of the trip, and they got a great home record. They play hard. They got a good power play against us at least, and we just gotta every night. You just like you said, you gotta break it down in one game or 3 game segments or whatever. You gotta get two or three, or go on a stretch and be four. It's pretty hard to go 4-0 on a road trip, but we've done it before and can do it again because we're right there if we just bear down and get it done.
Brent, this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, the hour has flown by. Yeah,
appreciate you doing this tonight. Give it up for Brent Peterson, longtime associate coach for the Nashville Predators. Forrest Schiller Poland, our on-site engineer. Gina from promotions. I, Calvin Smith, back in the studio. I am Chase McCabe. Stick around, though. We're not done with the hockey talk. The hockey talk. The hockey talk. Penalty Box Radio is next. ESPN 102.5 The Game.